Smuggler's Island.
I had gone down to the Jolly Roger Hotel on Smuggler's Island in search of good food, peace and quiet, and gentle English sunshine. And I had found violent death. Arlena Marshall, a femme fatale if ever there was one, had been brutally strangled on a deserted beach. There were two people who had very good reason to wish Arlena Marshall dead. Christine Redfern, whose husband Patrick had been pursuing a passionate love affair with her, and Captain Marshall, Arlena's husband, who had seemed to turn a blind eye to what was going on. But were there other, less obvious motives for the murder? That was what, only a few hours after the body had been discovered, my old friend Colonel Weston, assisted by Inspector Colgate and, of course, myself, had to investigate.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and George Baker as Colonel Weston in Agatha Christie's Evil Under the Sun.
We've got to get it down in black and white where everyone was at the time of the murder. Tedious, time-consuming business. It's got to be done.
Unfortunately, nine of the guests went off on an excursion first thing this morning and won't be back till six. And the Coens and the Mastermans, they come here every year with their children, all went off to the mainland for a picnic. I think that leaves them out of it too. Mr. Blatt has gone off sailing and isn't back yet. And the Reverend Lane is off on one of his long country walks.
That narrows the field a little. Perhaps we ought to get Marshall's daughter in. Not fair to keep the girl hanging around.
I'll go and find her, Colonel.
Thank you. She's a child of Marshall's first marriage, I take it.
Her mother was Sophia Martindale.
An arsenic poisoner?
She was acquitted.
Even so. What a background for the poor child. How old is she?
16. And rather young for her age.
I didn't see Arlena at all this morning. She has breakfast in bed and always gets down late. I can't bear to lie in, not when I'm on holiday.
Will you tell us what you did this morning?
I went to have a swim first thing. Then I met Mrs. Redfern and she asked me to go with her to Gull Cove.
What time did you and Mrs. Redfern set out?
She said she'd be waiting for me in the lounge at 10:30. I thought I was going to be late, but I wasn't. We left just before 10:30.
And what did you do when you got to Gull Cove?
I lay in the sun for a while, and Mrs. Redfern did some sketching in the shade. She doesn't like sunbathing. Then, later, she went back to the hotel to get changed for her tennis match, and I went for a swim.
Do you remember what time that was?
When Mrs. Redfern went back to the hotel?
Mm-hmm.
11:45.
You are sure of that?
Oh, yes. I looked at my watch.
The watch you have on now?
Yes.
Mind if I see? Correct to a second.
And after that, you had a bathe?
Yes.
And when did you get back to the hotel?
About 1:00. And then I heard about Arlena.
Did you get on all right with your stepmother?
Oh, yes.
Did you like her, mademoiselle?
Oh, yes, I was very fond of her. She was very kind to me.
Not the wicked stepmother, eh?
Oh, no, not at all.
You did not feel resentful when your father married again. You were not jealous in any way.
Not in the least.
Now, I want you to think very carefully. Have you any idea who might have killed your stepmother? Is there anything you've heard or anything you know that could help us in that respect?
No. I don't know who would have wanted to kill Arlena. Except, of course, Mrs. Redfern.
And why do you think that Mrs. Redfern would want to kill her?
Because her husband was in love with Arlena. But I don't think she'd actually want to do it herself. She'd just wish that she was dead. And that isn't the same thing at all, is it?
No, it is not at all the same.
And anyway, Mrs. Redfern could never do a thing like that. She isn't a violent person, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. She's not one of those who sees red. She would not be shaken by a storm of feeling, seeing life narrowing in front of her, seeing a hated face, a hated white neck, feeling her hands clench, longing to feel them press into the flesh.
Can I go now? Is that all?
Yes, that's all, Linda. Thank you for helping us. You know, I felt a bit of a cad questioning her about what went on between her father and stepmother. All the same, it happily done. Murder is murder. She's the person most likely to know the truth of things about them. I'm rather thankful she had nothing to tell us on that score.
Yes, I thought you were.
Don't you think you went a bit too far with all that hands sinking into the flesh business? Not quite the sort of idea to put into a child's head.
So, you thought I was putting ideas into her head?
Well, weren't you? Anyway, all we really got out of her was an alibi for the Redfern woman. Exit the jealous wife as top suspect.
There are better reasons than that for leaving Mrs. Redfern out of it. Apart from anything else, her hands are too small and delicate.
I suppose the Redferns ought to be our next priority. Which of them should we start with?
With the husband, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Before he has had too much time to recover from the shock.
I met her at a cocktail party about 3 months ago.
Captain Marshall has implied that until you both met down here, you did not know each other well. Is that so, Mr. Redfern?
Well, not exactly. As a matter of fact, I saw a fair amount of her one way or another.
Without Captain Marshall's knowledge?
I don't know whether he knew about it or not.
And was it also without your wife's knowledge, Mr. Redfern?
I believe that I mentioned to my wife I had met the famous Arlena Stewart.
But she did not know how frequently you were seeing her.
Probably not.
Did you and Mrs. Marshall arrange to meet down here?
I don't think there's much point in my trying to conceal anything from you. Arlena wanted me to come down here. I didn't really think it was a good idea with my wife and Marshall being here. But I suspect it was an added excitement as far as she was concerned. In the end, well, I would have agreed to do any mortal thing she asked me to. She had that kind of effect on people.
The eternal Circe.
She certainly could turn men into swine. I was completely infatuated with her. Whether she cared for me or not, I simply don't know. She pretended to, but I think she was one of those women who lose interest in a man once they've got him body and soul. She knew she'd got me all right. When I saw her lying there, dead on the beach this morning, it was like being hit by a bolt of lightning.
And now?
How much of this has got to be made public? It's not as though it could have any bearing on her death. And if it all comes out, it's going to be pretty rough on my wife.
And that concerns you, does it?
I realize you must think I haven't given her much thought up to now, but the real truth is that I care for my wife very deeply. Arlena was a kind of madness, the sort of damn fool thing that men do. But Christine is different. She's real. Badly though I've treated her, I've known all along that she was the person who really counted. I wish I could make you believe that.
But I do believe it, Monsieur Redfern. Oh, yes. I believe it.
Thank you, Monsieur Poirot.
If your infatuation for Mrs. Marshall played no part in the murder, then there will be no point in dragging it into the open. But what you don't seem to realize is that your intimacy with Mrs. Marshall may have a very direct bearing on the murder. It might establish a motive for the crime.
I don't follow you.
Supposing that Captain Marshall had found out about your affair with his wife.
You mean he might have killed her?
It had not occurred to you?
Never. Marshall's such a quiet kind of chap. It doesn't seem likely.
What was the attitude of Arlena Marshall toward this? Was she frightened that her husband might find out, or did she not care?
There were times when she seemed a bit nervous about it all.
Did she seem afraid of him?
No. I wouldn't say that.
And was there at any time a question of divorce?
Oh, no. I would never have done that to Christine, and I'm sure Arlena never thought of such a thing. She was perfectly satisfied with the husband she'd got. I was just one of a succession of poor mutts. Just something to pass the time with. I knew that all along, but it didn't alter my feelings towards her.
Now, Mr. Redfern, did you have a particular appointment with Mrs. Marshall this morning?
No, not a particular appointment exactly. We usually met every morning on the beach. We'd swim or paddle about on floats.
Were you surprised not to find her there?
Yes, I was. I couldn't understand it at all.
If she were keeping an appointment somewhere else, Do you have any idea with whom that might be?
No idea.
And when you had a rendezvous with Mrs. Marshall, where did you go?
Well, sometimes in the afternoon we'd meet at Gull Cove. The sun is off there at that time, so you don't usually get many people there.
Did you ever meet at the other place, Pixie Cove?
No, you see, Pixie Cove faces west, and people go around there in boats or on floats in the afternoon.
And your private rendezvous, they were always in the afternoon?
Yes. That's the time when most people go and have a sleep or mooch about, and nobody knows much where anyone is. After dinner, of course, we used to go off on a stroll together.
Ah, yes.
Then you can give us no help whatsoever as to why Mrs. Marshall should have gone off to Pixie Cove this morning.
I haven't the faintest idea. It wasn't like Arlena at all.
Can you think of anyone in her London circle who might have had a grudge against her? Someone you may have supplanted in her affection, perhaps?
I honestly can't think of anyone.
So, we seem to be left with three possibilities. An unknown killer, some maniac who just happened to be in the vicinity. And that's a pretty tall order.
But isn't it the most likely explanation?
Pixie Cove is practically inaccessible. You can only get at it by boat or by walking over the causeway, crossing the island by the hotel, and climbing down a rickety ladder. Neither way suggests a killing on the spur of the moment.
You said there were three possibilities.
There were two people on the island who had a very good reason for killing her. Her husband for one, and your wife for another.
My wife? Oh, but that's ridiculous. She's not that kind of person. There's no violence in her. Anyway, Arlena was much stronger than Christine. I doubt whether she could strangle a kitten, let alone a woman like Arlena. Oh, Christine could never have got down that ladder. She's no head for heights at all, no. No, no. She couldn't have done it.
Didn't think it necessary to tell the fellow his wife had got an alibi. Shook him up a bit, didn't it?
The arguments he advanced were as strong as any alibi.
Oh, she couldn't have done it. Marshall could. But he too has an alibi.
Well, the fact that he was typing letters? Oh, not very reliable.
And the letters themselves?
He could perfectly well have prepared them beforehand. The man is not a fool.
Well, I'll get Colgate to look into it.
Patrick said you wanted to have a word with me.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Redfern. Come in. Sit down, please.
Thank you.
You know Monsieur Poirot, of course. We're asking everyone to account for their movements this morning. Pure routine, you understand.
Where do you want me to begin?
As early as possible, madame. What did you do when you got up this morning?
On my way to breakfast, I went into Linda Marshall's room. She wasn't there, but I met her in the corridor. I asked her if she'd like to come with me to Gull Cove.
At what time was this?
About 8:30.
And where had Miss Marshall been?
She said she had been swimming.
And what time did you set out for Gull Cove?
I think it was just on 10:30.
And what did you do at Gull Cove?
I did a few sketches and Linda sunbathed.
And what time did you leave the cove?
At 11:45. I had a tennis match and had to change.
You had your watch with you?
No, I had to ask Linda what the time was.
I see.
And then I packed up my sketching things and went back to the hotel.
And Mademoiselle Linda?
Linda went and had a swim.
Now, did Linda Marshall actually enter the water before you left the beach?
Yes. She ran down to the sea as I was fastening my box. She was splashing about in the waves as I was on the path up the cliff.
You are quite sure of that, madame? That she really entered the sea?
Oh, yes.
Go on, Mrs. Redfern.
I went back to the hotel, changed and went to the tennis court, where I met the others. We played for about an hour, and were just going back into the hotel when we heard about Mrs. Marshall.
And what did you think, madame, when you heard the news?
What did I think?
Yes.
It was a horrible thing to happen.
Ah, yes. Your fastidiousness was revolted, I understand that. But what did it mean to you personally? Were you really surprised by the manner of her death?
I think I see what you mean. No, I was not surprised. Shocked, yes. But she was the kind of woman...
She was the kind of woman to whom such a thing might happen. Hmm? Yes, madame. That is the truest and most significant thing that has been said in this room. Now, leaving all personal feeling aside, what did you really think of Mrs. Marshall?
Is it really worthwhile going into all this now?
I think it might be, yes.
She's the kind of woman that's absolutely worthless as far as I'm concerned. She had no mind. She thought of nothing but men and clothes. She was a useless parasite. She was the sort of woman who could be mixed up in everything sordid. Blackmail, jealousy, violence, every kind of crude emotion. She appealed to the worst in people.
Mrs. Redfern, why did you mention blackmail?
Because she was being blackmailed.
And how can you be certain of that?
I happened to overhear something. You remember, Monsieur Poirot, that night we were playing bridge. My husband and I, you and Miss Darnley. I was dummy. It was very stuffy in the card room, and I went down to the beach for a breath of fresh air. Suddenly I heard voices. Mrs. Marshall was saying something like, "It's no good. I can't get any more money now. My husband will suspect something." And a man's voice said, "I'm not taking any excuses, Mrs. Marshall."
Do you know who the man was?
He was keeping his voice very low. It could have been anybody.
Now we're getting somewhere.
But I am not certain where. It is not a wicked blackmailer who lies dead. It is the victim. And blackmailers are not in the habit of killing off their victims.
Well, I can't deny that. But it does suggest a reason for Mrs. Marshall's going off to Pixie Cove by herself. She was meeting the fellow who was blackmailing her.
Pixie Cove would certainly be the ideal place for such a rendezvous. It is difficult of access, and it is deserted in the morning. And it has another advantage. I heard about it the other day. There is a cave there, a place where someone could wait, unseen.
Well, we'd better take a look inside it. We might find a pointer of some kind. You know, Poirot, this blackmail business does rather put a different complexion on things. None of the men staying here fitted the bill as a possible lover for Arlena Marshall. But a blackmailer's a very different kettle of fish. I'd like to have a word with Mr. Black when he comes back from his morning sailing.
Yes. A boat. That is very suggestive.
We'd better get back inside. It's time to ask Miss Brewster if she knows anything.
And after you and Mr. Redfern had found Mrs. Marshall's body, you rode back alone rather than taking the quicker route overland, huh?
No power on earth would make me climb the ladder up that cliff. I can face many things, but I have no head for heights.
And there's nothing else you know of that could help us in any way?
Well, there was one funny thing that happened earlier.
What was that, Miss Brewster?
Somebody nearly brained me with a bottle while I was having my morning bathe before breakfast. Chucked it out of one of the hotel windows.
Very distressing for you, but I don't think it tells us much.
Sorry I couldn't be more help, but I don't imagine you'll have much trouble finding out who did it.
And what makes you think that?
Well, with a woman like that, I mean, you've only got to hunt around in her unsavoury past.
Someone who had a grudge against her and came over from the mainland without anyone seeing him?
Oh, why should anyone see him? Mrs. Redfern and the Marshall child were over at Gull Cove. The rest of us were on the beach. Who on earth was there to see him except Miss Darnley?
And where was Miss Darnley?
Well, she was sitting in the cutting at the top of the cliff, sunny ledge. Mr. Redfern and I saw her when we were rowing round the island.
I see. Well, we'd better find out if she noticed anyone.
Not a soul, Colonel. And I would certainly have noticed if anyone had come along the path.
What about by sea? Did you notice anyone on a float or a boat during the morning?
No, I didn't. I was reading, you see. Of course, I looked out from my book from time to time, but as it happened, the sea was quite deserted every time I did so.
You didn't even notice Mr. Redfern and Miss Brewster when they went round?
No.
You were, I think, acquainted with Captain Marshall.
Ken was an old family friend. We grew up together. I hadn't seen him for a good many years.
And Mrs. Marshall?
I'd never exchanged half a dozen words with her before I met her here.
Would you say that Captain Marshall was devoted to his wife?
He may have been. I can't really tell you. He's rather old-fashioned. He doesn't have the modern habit of shouting his matrimonial woes from the rooftops.
Did you like Mrs. Marshall?
No.
I was out.
Surely by now you've discovered that Arlena Marshall wasn't exactly popular with her own sex. She was bored to death when she was with women, and she showed it. Though I must say, I admired her style. She had a great gift for clothes, and she wore them well.
She spent a great deal on clothes.
She must have done. But then she had money of her own, and Captain Marshall is quite well off.
Did you ever hear that she was being blackmailed?
Blackmailed? Arlena?
The idea seems to surprise you.
But what would anyone blackmail Arlena about?
There are certain things, I suppose, that Mrs. Marshall might not want to come to her husband's ears.
Well, I suppose so, but Arlena was rather notorious in the way she carried on. She never made any pretense of respectability.
You think, then, that her husband was aware of her various affairs?
You know, I really don't know what to think. I've always assumed that Kenneth accepted his wife for what she was, that he had no illusions about her. But it may not be so. Men can be very stupid sometimes.
What exactly do you mean by that?
Kenneth Marshall is really rather unworldly, you know. At heart, he's a bit of an idealist with rather old-fashioned notions about women. He may have believed in Arlena quite blindly. He may have thought she was just admired.
And you know no one who was likely to have had a grudge against Mrs. Marshall?
No, I can't think of anyone. But then I probably wouldn't know.
I thought you might have had some contact with her through your dressmaking business.
I only wish I had. But Arlena never came to me for dresses. A pity. I should have made a small fortune. No, Colonel, if you want to find out the dirt about Arlena, you need to talk to someone in her own intimate circle.
Thank you, Miss Darnley.
Well, hasn't Monsieur Poirot any questions to ask?
I can think of nothing, mademoiselle. Thank you.
Thank you, Monsieur Poirot.
Of course, we've only got her word for it that she spent all the time reading on Sunny Ledge.
You are right. The fact that Mr. Redfern and Miss Brewster noticed her there does not account for the whole time. But would she have been capable of strangling Arlena?
She certainly had a motive of sorts. She was a childhood friend of Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
She may have resented him marrying a woman she disapproved of.
And she may have resented even more the way in which Arlena Marshall treated her husband, taking a succession of young lovers and never even trying to conceal the fact from him. Oh, yes, it is easy enough to see that Rosamond Darnley may have hated her. But did she really hate her so much as to wish to kill her?
Well, I don't see why not. She may have thought the risk was well worth taking. With Arlena out of the way, there was nothing to stand in the way of her and Marshall.
And she is an exceedingly attractive woman.
Come in.
I thought you ought to know that some of the guests are getting a bit restive. We've been keeping them out of their rooms on the upstairs corridor. If you want to have a look around, the sooner the better.
Oh, thank you for reminding me, Inspector. We'll come right away. We'd better start with the Marshall's rooms.
Arlena Marshall certainly had a most extensive wardrobe. Dresses, lingerie, beach hats. Enough to last her for an entire year. Les femmes.
There's a packet of letters here. Three from young Redfern. He'll learn not to write letters to women after this. Women always keep letters and swear blind they've burnt them. Here's one from some other chap.
Mm-hmm. Dearest Arlena, God, I feel blue. To be going out to China and perhaps not seeing you again for years. I didn't know that any man could go on feeling crazy for a woman the way I feel for you. Thanks for the check. They won't prosecute now. It was a close shave, though, and all because I wanted to make money for you, to buy you the most fabulous emerald in the world. Don't forget me. I know you won't. You are mine always. J.N.
Another poor mutt.
It might be worthwhile to find out if this J.N., whoever he was, really did go to China.
Otherwise, he might be just the person we're looking for. Thinks he's found the love of his life and suddenly discovers he's been played for a sucker.
It's certainly worth following up.
Yes. That letter is important. I find it very important.
Shall we take a look at Marshall's room?
I'd like to have a look through his letters. See if there's anything to bear out his story about having to type those financial statements in a hurry.
And while you are doing that, I shall inspect Mademoiselle Linda's room.
Good idea. There's always a chance that Marshall may have put something in his daughter's room that he didn't want us to find.
All very neat and tidy for the room of a teenager. Everything in its proper place. Huh. It looks as if she has been burning something in the fireplace. A lump of something that looks like candle grease and some fragments of green paper with a figure 5. Part of a pull-off calendar, perhaps. And a pin. And some burnt hair. What is one to make of all this? Pour l'amour de Dieu, is it possible? And the books on the shelf. The Marriage of William Ashe. Very dull reading for a 16-year-old. But perhaps the best the lending library had to offer. Murder in the Cathedral. The Burning Court. Something wedged behind them. A History of Witchcraft and Sorcery. So, I was right. But as to the other, is that also possible? No, it is not possible. Unless...
In part 3 of Agatha Christie's Evil Under the Sun, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat and Colonel Weston by George Baker. Christine Redfern, Susanna Corbett, Patrick Redfern, Ian Glenn, Rosamund Darnley, Sabina Franklin. Miss Brewster, Joan Littlewood, Linda Marshall, Lindsay Fawcett, Inspector Colgate, Gerard McDermott. Evil Under the Sun is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.
Arlena Marshall had come down to the Jolly Roger Hotel on Smuggler's Island to pursue her love affair with Patrick Redfern, under the noses, as I think you say, of his wife and her husband. And she had been brutally strangled in a deserted cove. Yet those who had most cause to wish her dead, the wife, Christine Redfern, and the husband, Captain Marshall, had apparently sound alibis. Who could it have been that Arlena had gone out to meet at that lonely beach? Certainly not her lover, who was desperately searching for her. Could it have been the solitary yachtsman, Horace Blatt, who was most certainly up to something? Or the fanatic woman-hating clergyman, Stephen Lane? Colonel Weston and I had searched the rooms in the hotel for any clues, but we were none the wiser.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and George Baker as Colonel Weston in Agatha Christie's Evil Under the Sun.
This door off the balcony next to Miss Darnley's room. Any idea where it goes to, Poirot?
Well, there is only one way to find out, mon ami.
An outside staircase down to the beach.
I fancy this is the way people go down to bathe before breakfast. And, vous voyez, over by those rocks, there is a path which goes up to join the main route from the causeway.
So that one could go down these stairs take the path and go right across the island without having to go through the front of the hotel at all. If he did it, that's the way he went.
Huh? Which he, mon ami?
Captain Marshall. Despite everything, I still think he's our man.
Excuse me, Colonel Weston, but I've got Gladys Elcombe, the chambermaid of this floor, waiting to be questioned. I think she might prove quite useful.
Well, none of us actually liked her, you might say. She wasn't really a lady. More like an actress.
She was an actress.
Yes, sir. That's what I'm saying. She went on exactly as she felt like it.
Can you tell us how things were between her and her husband?
You don't think it was him that did it, sir?
Do you?
Oh, I wouldn't like to think so. He's such a real gentleman, Captain Marshall. He couldn't do a thing like that.
But you are not sure, Gladys. I hear it in your voice.
It's just that everyone's been talking about her and Mr. Redfern, and if Captain Marshall had found out... Well, he's a very quiet gentleman, but he's a bit stiff, if you know what I mean.
But you've nothing definite to go on. Nothing you might have heard either of them say to each other.
No, sir. Nothing definite like that.
I think that will do for the present. Poirot?
When you cleaned Miss Marshall's room this morning... Did you do the fireplace?
There wasn't any fire to do, sir. Not at this time of year.
And there was nothing in the fireplace itself?
No. If there had been, I'd have noticed.
What time did you do her room?
At 9:15, sir, when she'd gone down to breakfast.
And did she come up to her room again?
Yes, at about 9:45.
Did she stay in her room?
I think so, sir. She came out in rather an hurry, just before 10:30.
And you didn't go into her room again?
No, sir.
Now, there is one more thing I want to know. What people went swimming before breakfast this morning?
Well, sir, Captain Marshall and Miss Brewster were the early ones this morning, I think. They always go down for an early morning dip.
Did you see them?
No, sir, but their wet bathing things were hanging over the balcony rail as usual.
Miss Linda Marshall did not bathe this morning,
No, all her bathing dresses were quite dry, though she usually goes for a dip most mornings.
Now, I wonder if you have noticed whether a bottle is missing from any of the rooms you look after in this wing.
A bottle, sir? What kind of bottle?
Unfortunately, I do not know. But would you be likely to notice if one had gone?
I shouldn't from Mrs. Marshall's room, and that's a fact. She's got ever so many. And I couldn't be too sure about Miss Darnley either.
But the others?
Well, I might notice if I were to look special.
Perhaps you would be so good as to do so.
Certainly, sir.
Thank you. What's all this about, Poirot?
My orderly mind is vexed by trifles, mon ami. Miss Brewster said that when she was bathing before breakfast, a bottle was thrown from above and nearly hit her. I want to know who threw that bottle and why.
But, my dear chap, anyone could have tucked a bottle away.
No, not at all. If you have an empty bottle on your dressing table or in your bathroom, what do you do with it? I will tell you. You put it in a waste paper basket. You do not go to the trouble of going out onto your balcony and hurling it into the sea. You would only do that if you did not want anyone to notice that particular bottle.
But surely there's a perfectly simple... Come in.
Miss Darnley's waiting outside, sir. She says there's something she forgot to tell you.
Oh, well, we'd better hear it, then.
Oh, and it looks as if Marshall's in the clear about having to write those letters urgently this morning. Now, I found this among his papers.
My dear Marshall, sorry to worry you on your holiday, but an entirely unforeseen situation has arisen over the Burley and Tendring contracts. Oh, yes. This seems to confirm his story. You would better ask Miss Darnley to step in, Inspector.
Do go in, Miss Darnley.
I'm frightfully sorry. It probably isn't worth bothering you about.
Oh, won't you sit down?
No, it isn't worth sitting down for. It's simply this. I told you that I spent the whole morning on Sunny Ledge, but that isn't strictly accurate. At around 11:15, I went back to the hotel to get my sunglasses. My eyes were getting tired reading.
You went straight back to your room and out again?
Yes. Well, I did look in on Captain Marshall. I had his typewriter going, and I thought it was stupid of him to stay indoors on such a lovely day.
What did he say?
When I opened the door, he was typing so vigorously and frowning and looking so concentrated that I just went away quietly. I don't think he even saw me come in.
And what was the time then, Miss Darnley?
About 11:20. I noticed the clock by the reception desk as I was going out.
Thank you, Miss Darnley, for taking such trouble.
Well, I just thought you ought to know. Bye.
Well, that washes Marshall right out.
I agree. What are you looking so thoughtful about, Poirot?
I was wondering why Miss Darnley suddenly volunteered this extra evidence.
Well, there's nothing suspicious about that, surely.
No. It's just that she goes out of her way to provide the gallant captain with an alibi.
Yes?
Excuse me, but I've had a good look, sir. And as far as I can tell, I can't see that there's a bottle missing from any of them.
Ah, no matter. We will leave it.
Is there anything else, sir?
Yes, tell me. Have you noticed anything unexplained, out of the ordinary? You know, something that has made you say to yourself, that's funny?
Well, yes, there was one thing. Just a bath being run. And I did say to Elsie that it was funny, somebody having a bath at 12:00, before lunch.
Mm. Do you know who it was having a bath, mademoiselle?
I think we'd better be getting on, don't you, Poirot?
Huh? Oh, yes, of course, Colonel. Thank you, mademoiselle.
Thank you, sir.
It's time to have a look at that cave, don't you think?
You should take Mr. Redfern with you, since he knows the exact location.
Well, aren't you coming?
No, alas, I am like Miss Brewster and Mrs. Redfern. I do not care for perpendicular ladders.
Well, then you can take a boat.
No. My stomach, it is not happy at sea.
Nonsense, man, as calm as a mill pond today. You can't let us down. We might miss something without you.
That is true.
Oh, by the way, sir, the reverend gentleman has just got back, Colonel.
What's that?
Stephen Lane, sir. I asked him to wait in the lounge.
Ah, good, Colgate. We should certainly go and have a word with him.
What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground.
Sorry?
Murder. One of the first sins known on earth.
If you could just give us your movements today, sir.
Willingly. I'm fond of walking. Today I went to St. Petroc in the Coombe. That is about 7 miles from here. A very pleasant walk along winding lanes. I visited the church. It has some fragments of early glass and a splendid painted screen with the figure of St. Petroc and his dragon.
Did you meet anyone on your walk, Mr. Lane?
No. A couple of boys on bicycles passed me once. But if you want proof of my statement, I wrote down my name in the visitor's book in the church.
Is there anything you can tell us about the dead woman that might give some indication of who could have killed her? Anything you heard or saw?
I heard nothing. But I can tell you this. I knew instinctively as soon as I saw that Elena Marshall was a focus of evil. Woman can be a man's help and inspiration in life. She can also be man's downfall. She can drag a man down to the level of the beast. Elena Marshall was such a woman, made in the image of Jezebel and Aholibah. Now she has been struck down in the midst of her wickedness.
But you have no idea who might have struck her down. She was, in fact, strangled by a pair of human hands.
I know nothing. Nothing.
We must get to the cove.
Is that where it happened?
That is where it happened, Mr. Lane.
Can I come with you?
But certainly. You can accompany us and Mr. Redfern there in the boat. Let us be on our way.
The lads have been over the beach pretty thoroughly, sir. But I can't say they've come up with much. One empty cigarette packet, a chicken bone, 3 pieces of string, and a pair of scissors. The scissors have obviously been left out quite recently. They're still bright and shining. They weren't out in yesterday's rain.
Well, where were they found?
Close by the bottom of the ladder. And there was this fragment of a pipe.
Oh, a quality briar. Expensive.
You smoke a pipe, do you not, Mr. Lane?
Oh, yes. It's my old friend and companion. I've got it here. Never leaves my pocket. Tell me, where was the body found?
Just about where you're standing, sir.
Oh.
Now then, Mr. Redfern, where's the entrance to this cave? I can't see any sign of it.
It's over here. Just by this pile of rocks, the entrance is round here.
Oh. It's very narrow. It would be difficult for a man to squeeze through that.
You'll find its appearance is deceptive. You'll just about manage it, Monsieur Poirot.
Well, quite a handy little place. You'd never suspect it was here from the outside. Oh, what is it, Poirot?
Trace of perfume, perhaps?
Well, I can't smell anything. Doesn't seem to be anything of interest.
There is a ledge up there. Might be worth investigating, but it is beyond my reach. You are a tall man, Mr. Lane. Could I ask you to find out if there is anything there?
Of course. Yes, there's a box of some sort. Careful. Don't handle it more than you can help. There may be fingerprints.
A sandwich tin.
Ah, left behind from somebody's picnic, I suppose. Oh, very neat. Containers for salt and pepper and mustard. Well, that's funny. They're all full of salt.
Are you quite certain that it is salt, Inspector?
Oh, this isn't salt. Not by a long way. Could be a drug of some sort.
Better send it off straight away. Get your men to go over this place with a fine tooth comb. We may as well return to the hotel.
By all means. And let us go back while the sea is still calm.
Could she have been a drug addict, Poirot?
Arlena Marshall? I should doubt that. She had steady nerves, radiant health. No, I do not think she took drugs.
In that case, she may have run into the business accidentally and was put out of the way by the people running the show. For all we know...
They said I'd find you in here. I've just heard the news.
This is Mr. Horace Blatt, Colonel.
Do sit down, Mr. Blatt.
No, I won't, if you don't mind. I've been out in the boat since early this morning, missed the whole blinking show. She was strangled, was she?
She was, Mr. Blatt.
Nasty. Very nasty. Mind you, she asked for it. Hot stuff. Très moutard, eh, Monsieur Poirot? Any idea who did it?
Well, you know, we're supposed to be asking you the questions.
Oh, far away, then.
You said you went sailing this morning. What time would that have been?
Left here at 9:45.
Was anyone with you?
Not a soul. All on my little lonesome, Colonel.
Where did you go?
Along the coast in the direction of Plymouth. Well, I didn't get very far. Not much in the way of wind. In the end, I gave it up as a bad job and headed for home. Well, that's about it.
Thank you, Mr. Blatt.
One thing I can tell you. It wasn't me. The fair Arlena had no use for me. She had her own blue-eyed boy. And if you ask me, Marshall was getting wise to it.
Well, what makes you say that?
I saw him give Redfern a dirty look once or twice. Bit of a dark horse, Marshall. Looks as if he's half asleep most of the time, but I did hear that he nearly killed a bloke who'd welched on him over a business deal. I give you that for what it's worth.
We believe that Mrs. Marshall went to Pixie Cove this morning to meet someone. Have you any idea who that someone might be?
Redfern. No question.
No, it was not Mr. Redfern.
Well, then I haven't the foggiest. Well, it couldn't have been Gardner. His wife never lets him out of her sight. Mind you, I have seen the Reverend looking at her a good bit. He may have thought she was the daughter of Satan, but I bet he wouldn't have minded getting his fingers burned. Anyway, if that's it as far as I'm concerned, I'm off to the bar.
Thank you, Mr. Blatt. What do you make of him, Poirot? You've seen more of him than I have.
He likes to play the role of the rough diamond. But today there is something I have not seen before.
Well, and what's that?
I think he is nervous.
It didn't take them long to identify that stuff we found in the sandwich box. Diamorphine hydrochloride.
Heroin.
No, that's more like it. I'll wager that this is at the bottom of the whole business. A bit closer to the mark than worrying about people running bars and throwing bottles into the sea.
Excuse me, Colonel Weston, may I have a word?
What can I do for you?
Can you tell me what arrangements I can make about the funeral?
I think the inquest will be the day after tomorrow.
Thank you.
I'd like to return your letters, Captain.
Thank you, Inspector. I hope this means that my character is clear.
Looks very much like it. The chambermaid heard you typing, and Miss Darnley told us that she came to your room at 11:20, but you looked so busy she didn't want to disturb you. She said you didn't even notice her.
As a matter of fact, she is wrong. I did see her, though she may not have been aware of the fact. I caught sight of her in the mirror. And now I better get these letters to the post. Where will the inquest be held?
In the old courthouse in Nethercombe.
It didn't go so badly, did it?
Difficult to say.
They were so cautious.
Any idea what the police think?
They say they're perfectly happy with my alibi, but they still seem pretty suspicious.
There are times when I can't believe that any of this really happened.
Don't you worry. We'll pull through, all right. But we'd better be getting back. Linda will be getting anxious.
What happened, Daddy? What did they say?
Inquest adjourned. For a fortnight.
That means they haven't decided.
More evidence is needed.
But what do they think?
Well, whatever the police think, they're not giving it away at present. We shall all just have to wait. Look, Linda, I've got a couple of urgent phone calls to make. I'll be back as quickly as I can.
Try not to let it worry you so much. I know it's all been very terrible, but it's no good brooding over it. I mean, it isn't as if you were fond of Arlena.
No, I wasn't fond of her.
Then why are you getting so obsessed by it all?
You don't understand.
I think I do, my dear.
No, you don't. You don't understand in the least. And Christine, Mr. Redfern doesn't either. You just think it's morbid, that I'm dwelling on it all when I needn't. But it isn't like that at all. If you knew what I know...
What is it that you know, Linda?
Nothing.
Be careful, Linda. Be very careful. Arlena is dead. That's all there is to it. Forget it all, and for goodness sake, hold your tongue.
If Father...
Don't talk about it.
I've got to say one thing. My mother...
What about her?
She was tried for murder, wasn't she?
Yes.
And then Father married her. That looks, doesn't it, as though Father didn't think murder very wrong.
Don't say things like that. The police haven't got anything against your father. He's got an alibi. They know he couldn't have done it. Do you understand that? You'll be able to leave here soon. You'll forget everything. You'll see you will.
I shall never forget. Never.
Madame Redfern, there is something I wish to know.
And what is that?
It was a chance phrase of yours the other day that caught my attention.
Really?
You were describing how you went into Linda Marshall's room and found her absent, and how she returned, and you asked her where she had been.
And I said she had been bathing.
No, but you did not say that. Your words were, she said she had been bathing.
It's the same thing?
No, madame. It is not quite the same thing. It suggests that it was not evident to you that she had been bathing. Now, what was there about her appearance or her manner that led you to be surprised when she told you that?
That's very clever of you. I remember now. I was a little surprised because she was carrying a parcel in her hand.
A parcel? Do you happen to know what was in it?
As a matter of fact, I do. The string broke and they were scattered all over the floor.
Oh, what were scattered?
Candles. I helped her pick them up.
Candles. And how did she react when this happened?
She was upset, embarrassed. But I don't understand what this is about.
Have you seen a book like this before?
I'm not sure. It may have been the one Linda was looking at in the lending library in Leathercombe the other day. She put it back on the shelf when she noticed me. I don't know what it was exactly.
I'll see for yourself.
A history of witchcraft, sorcery, and the compounding of untraceable poisons. I don't understand. What does it mean?
I fear it may mean a great deal. One more question. On the morning of the murder, did you take a bath before you went out to play tennis?
Why on earth should I do that? I wouldn't have had time anyway. Why do you ask?
Oh, it is of no importance.
So, it's my turn, is it?
I do not understand, mademoiselle.
While the chief constable was conducting his little inquisition, you sat by and said nothing. Now I think you are conducting your own inquiry. First Christine Redfern, and now me.
You are very intelligent, mademoiselle. I've thought so ever since I arrived here. It would be a pleasure to discuss this business with you.
You want to know what I think about the whole thing?
It would be very interesting.
I think it's really very simple. The clue is in Arlena's past.
The past?
Oh, not necessarily the very remote past. Arlena was fatally attractive to men, and I suspect that she got tired of them rather easily.
And then discarded them.
Exactly. And amongst her followers was a man who resented that. Probably some tepid little man, vain and sensitive. I think he followed her down here, waited his opportunity, and killed her. The day of the murder, it was glorious sunshine. But on the day before, there was rain and thick mist. Anyone could come to the island then without being seen. He only had to go down to the beach and spend the night in the cave. That mist, Monsieur Poirot, is important.
There is a good deal of truth in what you have said.
Anyway, that's my theory, for what it's worth. Now, tell me yours.
Mademoiselle, I am a very simple person. I always incline to the belief that the crime is invariably committed by the most likely person. From the very beginning, it seemed to me that one person was most clearly indicated.
Go on.
But you see, there is what you call a fly in the ointment. It seems impossible for that person to have committed the crime.
Well?
So, what do we do about it? That is the problem. May I ask you a question?
Of course.
When you came in to change for tennis on the morning of the murder, did you take a bath?
The bath? What do you mean?
You know, a bath. You turn on the taps, it fills up with water, you get into it.
No, Monsieur Poirot, I did not take a bath.
So, nobody took a bath. That is extremely interesting.
I suppose this is the Sherlock Holmes touch.
No. Will you permit me to be impertinent, madame?
I'm sure you couldn't be impertinent, Monsieur Poirot.
That is very kind of you. Then may I venture to say that the scent you use is delicious. It has a nuance, a delicate, elusive charm. Gabrielle number 8, I think.
How clever you are. Yes, I always use it.
So did the late Mrs. Marshall. It is chic, and very expensive.
I happen to like it.
You sat where we are now, mademoiselle, on the morning of the crime. You were seen here, or at least your sunshade was seen, by Miss Brewster and Mr. Redfern as they passed by in their boat. During the morning, are you sure you did not go down to Pixie Cove and enter the cave there?
Are you asking me if I killed Arlena Marshall?
On the day of the murder, someone had been in that cave who used Gabrielle number 8.
You just said yourself, Monsieur Poirot, that Arlena Marshall used the same scent. She was on the beach there that day. Presumably she went into the cave.
But why should she go into the cave? It is dark and narrow there, and extremely uncomfortable.
Don't ask me for reasons. Since she was actually in Pixie Cove, she was the most likely person. I've told you I never left this place the whole morning.
Except for the time you went back to the hotel and looked into Captain Marshall's room.
Yes, I'd forgotten that.
And you were wrong, you know. Captain Marshall did see you.
Kenneth saw me. Did he say so?
He saw you in the mirror that hangs over the table.
Why are you looking at my hands? Surely you can't imagine.
Imagine what, mademoiselle?
Nothing.
By the way, mademoiselle, do you happen to know where Miss Linda is at the moment?
She said she was going down to Gull Cove. Oh, but you don't need to ask her any more questions. Surely.
What is it? Why have you come to look for me? What do you want?
The other day you told the chief constable that you were fond of your stepmother and that she was very kind to you.
Well?
That was not true, was it, mademoiselle?
Yes, it was.
No. She may not have been actually unkind to you, but you were not fond of her. I think that you disliked her very much. That was plain to see.
Perhaps I didn't like her very much. But one can't say that when a person is dead. It wouldn't be decent.
Did they teach you that at school?
More or less.
When a person has been murdered, it is more important to be truthful than decent.
I suppose you would say a thing like that.
I would say it. And I do say it. It is my business, you see, to find out who killed your stepmother.
I want to forget it all. It's so horrible.
But you cannot forget it, can you?
I suppose some beastly madman killed her.
No. I do not think it was like that at all.
You sound as if you knew.
Perhaps I do know. I know that you are troubled. Very troubled. Will you trust me to do all that I can to help you?
You've got it all wrong. There's nothing you can do for me. I don't know what you're talking about.
I am talking about candles.
I won't listen to you. Leave me alone. I won't listen.
But you must listen, mademoiselle. And you know why, do you not?
In part four of Agatha Christie's Evil Under the Sun, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat and Colonel Weston by George Baker. Captain Marshall, Robin Ellis, Linda Marshall, Lindsay Fawcett, Rosamund Darnley, Sabina Franklin, Christine Redfern, Susanna Corbett, Patrick Redfern, Ian Glenn. The Reverend Stephen Lane, Ewan Thomas, Horace Blatt, John Hartley, Gladys, Nicole Forbes, Inspector Colgate, Gerard McDermott. Evil Under the Sun is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.